Jesus is the light of the world. During this season of Lent, we have been on a journey in the Gospel of John. There are, in that particular book, that rendering about the stories of Jesus' life, there are seven miracles that happen. They all follow a same particular pattern. We have talked about that for the last few weeks. And they point us towards an understanding. There is a context about what is going on. Someone states the need, that or identifies a need that is there. Jesus responds in an over-the-top way, in a miraculous way that bends reality, but also goes well beyond what people are really kind of like thinking would be a reasonable response to that. It goes that much more. And then there is the people's response. How do they make sense of that? How do they come to an understanding about who he is and who God is and who we are? So all of that is at play and is intended by the writers to point towards how it is that God is offering us this abundant life, this life that goes beyond what we could even really dream for ourselves. So this particular chapter is very rich. It's one of my favorite chapters, actually, because there is so much there. And because there is so much there, I'm tempted to say, well, strap in, because we're going to be here for a while. I'm not going to ask you to do that. But I want you to know that there is a lot here, and it's worthwhile going back and actually reading the full chapter. And if you have access to the companion book for this series, Seven Miracles, which was written by my wife, Gina Anderson Cloud, and some of her colleagues at their church. If you look at that chapter, there is such good information there. Megan Dietrich wrote that chapter, and she just does a great job. So I would just commend that to you. The other thing I want to tell you is that, like I said, there's a lot here. But we're going to hit some really important parts and leave the rest for you to come back to. It's kind of like a police procedural. Now, I don't know if you're familiar with that that genre, but one of the things that Gina and I have found years ago that we could kind of kick back and relax is watch British television, and particularly British shows that talk about a murder. That's the most relaxing thing that we could find. And if you watch a lot of British TV, you know that sort of thing is right there. And they're mysteries. They're working their way through a kind of a whodunit. And in some ways, that's exactly the kind of thing that we are working through now. Now, I also love British comedy. Particularly Monty Python. Thank you very much. Thank you very much. However, Gina is of a different opinion, and so I must watch that by myself. This starts with a whodunit. The disciples and Jesus are walking through, and the question arises with a blind man that they encounter, who sinned? Now, the understanding, the way that people would have made sense of the reality of a person being blind or disabled in some way or very ill would have been that that person brought it on themselves or someone sinned in such a way that there's a reason why God would allow that to occur. That's certainly one particular understanding of it. There are other ways of addressing that, but for the religious mind at the time that Jesus was working with the people was that if you had done something, this is the consequence of it. And so they naturally ask, was it the parents that did this? Was it this person who was born this way? But maybe he did something. Something's happened here. Who do we blame? Right? Who is it that we can kind of like point to and sort of put a box around this being a reality. Now, Jesus says, no. I love this about Jesus. Jesus will take the kind of conventional religious understanding about things and sort of say, let's look past. So Jesus says, no, but watch what this says. Understand this from a deeper level. And then he begins the work. Now, Jesus does miraculous work in lots of different ways. There are times that Jesus speaks the words and the healing is immediate. Sometimes Jesus will give instructions and the person needs to go and do that, and then there is a healing. So there's no kind of standard sort of standard of care that Jesus acts on and then you have the immediate predicted response. Jesus is too wild for that. And actually, in this particular case, does something that some people find a little, you know, this is a little gross, right? Because what does he do? He spits on the ground and creates mud with the saliva and the dirt that is there and smears it on the man's eyes. Pretty powerful. Very intimate thing. I don't know if you've ever done that with somebody. But imagine. This is a very personal, intimate thing that happens between these two. And Jesus tells him, all right, now what I want you to do is I want you to go to this this religious site. It's going to be near the temple, and I want you to wash in that space. That space is used for ritual cleaning. There's a pool that is there. Jesus gives him the exact address, and he's supposed to go there and wash. How he gets there, I don't know. I mean, you know, we don't have, anything other than he's been blind from birth, so he must have had a support system. Maybe Jesus' disciples said, hey, come on with us. We'll take you there. Somehow he makes it there, and in the moment of him washing away that mud, his sight is given to him. It's not even restored. It's new. Can you imagine that? Having had no frame of reference other than the physical reality that you have encountered, suddenly he is able to see. And the whole question of who sinned almost seems beside the point, right? He's healed. Now, remember that when you are in a bad place, when you have a disability or a sickness, you are understood as having done something to deserve this. Somebody sinned, but also you are rejected in this particular time and place. You would have been rejected from the community. Some people who were understood to be sick were understood to be unclean, and they had to announce themselves as they're going down the road, unclean, they would have to say, so that people would know to stay away from them because they didn't want to get caught up in all that, right? So suddenly, not only is his sight given to him, he has the capacity to use this light that he has never really fully seen before, but he also has entry back into the community, back into the religious life of his community, back into a place where people would accept him being there in the room, in the community right there, which is a beautiful thing. It's a powerful thing. And so he is doing that, and people who had seen him, maybe who had been providing for him when he was begging of them, people see that and say, what happened to you? Here's the procedural part. Because this actually happened on a Sabbath. The rules are that you're not supposed to do anything that is work on a Sabbath. So if you're a particularly faithful person, work, or actually causing other people to work, is a violation of one of the commandments. You'll rest on this day. Now, we contemporary Christian people really have a complicated relationship with this whole idea, right? I mean, sometimes when I would think about this, it's like, well, I'm resting, I'll just go to the restaurant. No, that's not good, because I'm causing people to work in the midst of that. Oh, I am, we've talked about this a number of times already. It's complicated. This is how we are working our way through our understanding at this point, which is not as rigid. And for Jesus, obviously, it wasn't particularly rigid because he healed him. And in the process of that, as the story started to spread, people became aware that this man had been healed on a Sabbath, and that was wrong. We're not going to tolerate that. And it makes its way through the circles. And there are all these interrogations that go on. Who did this? What did he look like? I don't know. I was blind, you know? And remember, we started this with, who sinned? And in the midst of this, an amazing thing happens with this miracle. But then the question comes back is, who sinned? And obviously, this Jesus must be a sinner, because this happened outside of our rules. Isn't that interesting? We will get so locked up into what the proper behavior is that we will even miss the miraculous work of God in transforming everything. This plays out in lots of ways. We will get so wrapped up into who is right and wrong that we will forget about the very nature of the people that are involved, including the fact that those people are made in the image of God, and that they are beloved by a God who never forgets, even though they might be a sinner, even though they might be illegal. I mean, in this particular moment, Jesus is the illegal one. He did this. Our categories, the way and the light in which we put people, have to be really carefully examined. And perhaps Jesus has something to say about this. It becomes such a controversy. They bring in the parents of the poor man who had been blind. Is this your son? Yes, that's her son. How did this happen? We don't know. And the Bible is really explicit. Like, the parents are freaked out and fear being thrown out of the community. Being, you're one of them. So they did the best thing that they could do, which is say, he's old enough, ask him. And they did again. And he keeps saying, I don't know. Well, what do you think? I think he was a prophet. Well, that was a mistake. That was the wrong thing to say. How do you mean he was a prophet? And then that man began to testify and push back on the whole religious understanding that the religious authorities were standing there holding against him, which was just horrible. They're enraged, and they throw him out of the community. He is thrown out again from the community that he had just been reintegrated back into, because the very Lord of life and love dared to bring him back in, but did it in the wrong way. We don't want that around here. This, you must be a sinner, he must be a sinner. That's terrible. Get out. Interesting how these categories tear through lives. Now, we didn't read this last part, but I think it's great. So I'm going to share with you what Jesus does. This is picking up in John chapter 9, but at verse 35. And Jesus finds the man. Jesus heard that they had expelled the man born blind. Finding him, Jesus said, "Do you believe in the human one?" By the way, human one is code language for Jesus himself. There's a long story to that. Just trust me, okay? Do you believe in me, the Messiah? Now, the man who was blind answered, "Who is he, sir?" Remember, he was blind. I want to believe in him. And Jesus said, "You have seen him." Interesting use of the phrase. You have seen him. In fact, he is the one speaking with you. And the man said, "Lord, I believe." And he worshiped Jesus. Having had his life handed back to him, having handed the very goodness of light and an understanding that goes beyond what he would have had to have read, he wants to believe. He believes, even though he finds himself on the outs with his religious community. Even though he was an illegal. Jesus keeps going. Jesus said, "I have come into the world to exercise judgment so that those who don't see can see." This man. "Those who don't see can see, and those who see will become blind." You see the flip? You see what's happening there? And do you see the critique of those who are supposed to be the guides? Jesus will say lots of things about blind leading the blind. Now, of course, some Pharisees are hanging around and hear Jesus say this. Some Pharisees who were with him heard what he said and asked, "Surely we aren't blind, are we?" And Jesus said to them, "If you were blind, you wouldn't have any sin. But now that you say, 'We see,' your sin remains." This is the rebel Jesus that will stand and say, "What are you doing to each other? What have you done and failed to do?" the question that started this whole thing comes right back around and points in different directions. Who is blind? Who is sinning? So I have to tell you that the homework for this week, and it's homework for me for sure, is to make sense of what I can see and what my sin is. And I invite you to the same. As we prepare for Easter and the resurrection and the forgiveness of sins, we still have to make sure that we are looking very well into the reality that is right in front of us. And I say all this to you in the name of the Father and the Son and the Holy Spirit. Amen.